This is another episode of The Builder's Diary by Cloudonaut. The Builder's Diary is about getting insights into the day-to-day challenges of builders. My name is Andreas, and in this episode, Florian Dröge and Lars Hüppe from our partner TechRacer share with us what they have learned about developing complex serverless applications in a team. So first of all, I want to introduce Florian Dröge. He came into contact with the cloud as a working student developing a web application on Azure. Then, after graduating with a master's degree in computer science, he joined TechRacer as a cloud consultant. And Florian is really into clean code, and thus well-thought structure and architecture is very important to him. I also want to welcome Lars Hüppe to the show. He has been turning business requirements into code for almost 25 years. He enables teams to develop software the agile way. And Lars joined TechRacer really in the early days of the company back in 2001. So together, Florian and Lars design and build serverless applications together with a team of software engineers and cloud architects at TechRacer. So welcome to the show, Lars and Florian. Nice to have you.
Nice to see you, Andreas.
Great. So I'm excited to have you here. I'm even more excited about the topic, serverless applications in a more complex environment together with a team. So I'm really keen to learn about what you've been going through in the past years. Before we start, I want to highlight one more thing. So TechRacer is hiring cloud consultants focusing on AWS serverless development. So exactly the topic that we're talking about today. So if you are excited about building serverless apps, you should definitely check out the job description. You will find all the details in the show notes. Okay, so now it's time to really dive into the topic. So when developing serverless applications, it looks very easy at the beginning. If you read through the blog post and some examples, it looks really easy to do. But then if you dive in more complex projects, you sooner or later realize that there is a lot to consider and to think about. So Lars, the first question for you is, could you maybe take us on a journey? What does a typical serverless project at TechRacer look like, if there is a typical project, or at least maybe take us on a trip to one of your projects?
Yeah, so to be honest, I would say there is not a typical serverless project. And even in serverless, we have learned over the past 2 years that serverless is an even wider topic than the thing that we are doing, because we are doing software development or development of software applications, and we use serverless, especially AWS serverless, to implement those applications. I think we can separate different kinds of projects. So there are these, let's say I have Lotus Domino database or Microsoft Access database, and I want to get rid of that and to bring it to a modern platform. So that, from my point of view, is a 10 to 20 days project. And for that, we have good patterns to quickly get those things done. And that is would be where I would say that are for us the easy projects. Yeah, and the more challenging projects are the ones that where you see, okay, this is going to be a big thing. The domain itself is quite complex, and I have in mind a special project where on top we saw, or it was definitely clear, that we have to develop something that is robust and maintainable for the next decades. Yeah, because the topic, the project was about a company pension scheme. So, and immediately you realize that, okay, today we are implementing a feature where people can put some portion of their salary into their pension scheme. But it is clear that they will do this for the next 20, 30, or 40 years. And what comes then. Yeah. So, and I think that's the one of the most challenging things on those kind of projects to always have in mind. This project is not over after 1 year or so. Yeah. This application will have to run for a very, very long time, and developers that come after us into that project should be able to get into it. I would not say easily, but as a good developer, it should be possible with reasonable effort, and they should be able to modify and keep on adding new features to that applications over a very long time period.
Okay. So what I get from that is at TechRacer, you're not only doing the typical POC project, building a quick serverless solution to showcase something, but you are also in really building solution that last, and you're using serverless technologies to achieve that.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds very impressive, because I think most of what I have been doing as a consultant so far is just we build very quick and dirty a solution to showcase this works on AWS, which is a totally different story, of course, than building a system that is there to last for, I don't know, 20 years, which is which seems quite a challenge. Okay, very cool. So Florian, Lars is describing the setup or the scenarios that you operate in your projects. My question for you is, probably there's also no typical serverless stack, but could you share one of the serverless tech stacks that you have been using in a project recently?
So our team is focusing mainly on development with TypeScript and the Cloud Development Kit CDK. One reason for this is because we don't only build backend. Sometimes we have to build one or multiple frontends too. In our team, we have people who focus on backend or frontend development, but there isn't always a frontend, or there isn't always in every sprint something to do in backend and frontend. So since everyone can knows TypeScript, they can work in frontend and backend too, and works with CDK for the infrastructure fine as well. So we have TypeScript all the way through in the infrastructure code, the runtime code in the backend and the frontend, if there is any. And services we normally use are, well, the classics one for serverless in AWS, like Lambda, DynamoDB, S3, SNS. Recently, we're looking more into serverless Aurora and so on. We maintain those applications for a longer period of time. So we're, for us, the topic monitoring our applications, especially such a distributed application, is a big topic for us.
Okay, that sounds really cool. So let me recap that. So the serverless tech stack is, so the important parts are TypeScript and the CDK. You're using the classic serverless services. And I think one thing that I already get from what you explained is, it seems also you're already going the event-driven architecture way. So you mentioned EventBridge and SNS and stuff. So I think that's definitely something we should talk about later as well. So thanks for sharing that. So Lars, when you do a serverless project in a more complex domain, so what are your approaches to really, basically, I said that at the introduction, translate the business requirements into something that actually runs on AWS, so code and infrastructure? So what are your approaches? How do you tackle that?
One thing that we experience quite often, project started, the team was lacking senior developers.
They were mostly, they had a lot of information about or knowledge about the AWS cloud and the services.
Yeah,
but exactly. The basics of development were lacking.
Yeah, so the team was technically they were highly skilled. Yeah, they were very confident about which is AWS services to use and how to use them, but they were focusing on getting quick results. Yeah. So like you said in the introduction, POC. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So customer came with requirements and they immediately targeted how to get it into something visible. To make it even worse, also the customer was prescribing in some way the solution. Yeah. So while we learned from software development that it's better as a customer to describe your problem you want to get solved and then discuss with your development team what could be a solution for this problem, and also for the development team to understand the why. What is the pain point with this? How are you doing it today, and why do you want to change it? Yeah, what is the thing that should be better afterwards, to understand those things? And so first thing, customer did not come with problem description, but with already predefined, I want this feature and I want to enter this number and want to see that result or something like that. And developers who were also aiming to get this thing visible quite quickly. And the approach that we are using is we push the brake a little bit at the beginning of such a project and say, stop. First, we want to understand your business, and we want to develop together with you the domain of what are we doing here, what is the domain, where are the boundaries, what are the things that we are not solving or that we will not implement in our app, and of course, when coming to the features, also to understand why do we need this feature, what problem does it solve, and finally, at the end, to know which features are the most important ones and which are not so important. So to see, to be sure when we get to the end of the budget that we have at least the important things implemented. that was an experience for me where I learned, okay, serverless development is a very new stuff and I think every developer loves it. Traveling to a customer's data center and to install something on a machine in that data center and then being back in the office and getting a call, hey, we think there is something missing or there is something is not working as expected. And so, so that's really cool. And also the building blocks that AWS offers for us is, I think it makes every developer happy. But this has to come together or be brought together with experience in developing applications. And when you bring those competencies together, the people who have been developing software applications over a long period, even before AWS Serverless came up, and the people, the developers who know which services to use for what and how to instrument them, then I think you get a very good solution out of that. Coming back to your question, what is the approach? Yeah, first understanding the domain, working with the customer. We decided in this project to use a domain-driven approach. So we started with an event storming session and discovered a lot of things. Yeah. So what happens in your process and how is it done today? Yeah. Always to understand how are you doing it without the application to know, okay, what is the thing that the application should do afterwards? And yeah, that's the first thing. And then we implement that stuff. And the challenging thing on this approach is also that you have to go back to this event storming session from time to time, periodically, while customers often think, okay, we have to do this once. We do it at the beginning of a project. We spend one day or several days in workshops with that. And then we have everything. Yeah. And then the development team can start. But in the ideal process, it's not like that. So from time to time, and right now, after working for 2 years with this domain model, we have come to a point where we have the understanding that, okay, it's necessary to go back to that big picture and to see what do we have to extend and what new things have we discovered and how do we have to modify it.
So I can feel that urge of developers in a project. So as they have all the building blocks available, you as a developer really want to get started as quickly as possible and implement a solution. But as you mentioned, if you're not diving into the details of your domain before that and discuss with your customer the details of basically the business and the problem that you're trying to solve, you can end up in a situation where you have a shiny serverless architecture, but you totally forgot about the domain and the business. And then it's hard to get everything in, and you're ending up with a huge complex system. So I think what you are highlighting here is to apply the technology or the approaches that we have in software engineering is really important in serverless projects as well. And of course, then it helps to have a senior developer in the team that has experience with translating those business requirements into systems and into code, because that's basically a thing that is still in high demand, even if you have those serverless building blocks, right? So it's important.
Yeah. And when I entered this project and worked with the team, one of the first things that I told to them is all your logic, your calculations, and all the things that you are doing with the pension scheme of an employee, it should all work without spending one thought on AWS.
Mm. yeah.
And once you get that working, then we talk about, okay, how do we bring it on Lambda, and where do we persist the stuff, Dynamo or Aurora or whatever. Yeah. So, but. Mm-hmm. That was one of the first discussions that we had. Yeah.
So I have a follow-up question on that. So after you really thought up through the whole domain and designed your software architecture without thinking about AWS, do you think that also helps to, migrate parts of that application to other AWS services or maybe even other cloud providers in the future? Because for me, it feels a little bit, if you have your, interfaces, your abstraction layers well thought through, it should be, at least in theory, much simpler to move parts or whole parts of that to other services or even other providers.
Yeah, I think that's something where Florian can tell something about, because I guess it's about building abstractions mm-hmm. to be able to decide in a later point of development, using DynamoDB for this entity was perhaps not a good decision. How can we switch? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Florian,
your turn.
Yeah, so basically, we try to follow the philosophy of clean architecture pictured by Robert C. Martin. Well, it's basically about you have your core logic and everything else, even persistence or a front-end API and stuff is on the outside. So it's they're all just adapters to your core logic, which can also be layered. That's the difference between the clean architecture and the hexagonally part, but basically it's about you can change those adapters, and that's the same for our serverless applications. The core doesn't know that it's serverless. The core logic does not know that it's stored on DynamoDB or in Aurora serverless. And that's not only for good for migrating to another cloud, but also if you encounter problems with your persistence. Maybe you started out with a DynamoDB because you thought, okay, I know all my access patterns, but after 2 years, there's a new feature and suddenly some access patterns change completely. And now you could say, okay, let's move this storage to an Aurora serverless database. And the core logic stays the same. You just have change the accessors to the persistence. Basically, this isn't all new. So it's what programmers talk for centuries. But you still have to keep this in mind, because if you look on examples on AWS, even in documentation, they show quick and short examples where you have your handler, and in the handler they create the document client for DynamoDB, they create the items, they make the parsing all in one function. but it's hard to maintain stuff like this.
So this clean architecture helps you to have basically a model in mind to architect your software in a way that it's possible to change some parts of the system, for example, an underlying AWS service, without having to rewrite the whole code. That's basically, in my own words, the summary of what you have been describing.
I just wanted to add one more, because when we say that, it's important for us that just because it's a service or a microservice, it still has to be modular like this, according to clean architecture or to the hexagonal architecture, so that in itself you can change those parts easily and not only replace the whole microservice.
Very good. So Florian, we are already in the topic of how a serverless architecture evolves over time. So I've experienced that together with Michael. We have been building Marbot, and which is also a serverless application. And we have been replacing services that we have been using over time just because we found out another way to solve the same thing. And I can give you one example. So right now we are using Kinesis data streams as basically the event bus is the name. And we are now thinking about replacing that maybe with an SQS FIFO queue. To be able to do that, it's really important that you structured your code and your application in a way that it's easy to do so. And I think, do you have other examples, from your project where you basically over time, realized that some of the things you started with, could be replaced with better options, or you just needed to find a solution for something?
Well, the capabilities were always there, but our approach for NoSQL design, for instance, is one thing that changed. Now we would prefer kind of single table design. We wouldn't, for a complex application like pension scheme application, we would not recommend putting everything in one table, but it could work. But even for separating some different kinds of data for audit purposes, makes definitely sense.
Lars, you already mentioned an event-driven architecture. So could you share some insights into how the project evolved from that perspective? So did you start with an event-driven architecture from the beginning, or is that something that evolved over time?
Yeah, first let's say, why is domain-driven design, why has it become so popular nowadays? Although the concept is about 20 years old, and one reason is because of the rise of event-driven architectures. Mm-hmm. So one decision that we had to make also in the beginning was whether we put everything in one code repository or if we split into many different code repositories. And so we discussed about the pros and cons, but since we have not several teams working on several parts of the domain, we decided, okay, let's put everything in one repository to benefit from high consistency of your deployments and code bases. So, but it can lead into a behavior, we have learned that, where people are developing like when they would develop on a monolithic application. They create tight couplings between different lambdas and topics and use, for example, SNS and Lambda like for remote procedure calls instead of really working event-driven. So, and we recognize that by increasing amount of SNS topics in our stacks. And we thought, hey, what are those many SNS topics about? And the names of the topics were mostly like, I want that, and I want, and please calculate me that, and please store this stuff for me. Yeah. So sending commands over the line where we discovered, okay, this might become a little bit difficult in the future or when we continue like that, because every Lambda has to know, there is another Lambda which does this thing for me. Or on the other hand, if you say there is a need to recalculate the pension scheme of an employee, you have to know that it is already there. Yeah, but the event-driven is more to say to the world, hello, in my area, this thing happened, and then the Lambda, which recalculates your pension scheme, knows, oh, this is relevant for me. I have to recalculate the pension scheme. So this is something that we experience, really, and I, my hypothesis is that this is due to the decision that we have put everything into one repository. Yeah? So it was kind of trade-off.
Yeah, but it's also something that I observe very frequently in projects that I come in, that I think it's also because the remote procedure call approach is maybe what we all know, very, very well known to. And so the event-driven, really following the event-driven approach is, I think, something you have to get your head around, and you need to get into that way of thinking
and,
about things.
Perhaps to add one more thing on that. Yeah, in clean code, for example, you learn about how to name your things, your functions, your variables. And one rule of thumb is you can use a short name for your variable when the scope of its usage is very small. Yeah, for example, in a for while loop, using I as the counter is okay when the for loop consists of one line of code. Yeah, so it's totally okay. And so the rule is, the longer the distance of your declaration and the usage of your variables, the better should be the naming of the variable. And I think applying that to the question about how to use SNS and Lambda, I would say it's similar. So inside a very closed and coherent scope in itself, you can use command pattern with SNS and Lambda. When you say, I have this very isolated subdomain where I know what things have to be managed, and perhaps I put one Lambda as an adapter to the outside world, but inside it is the scope of things that are have to be done here is very small. So it's, for me, it's totally okay to push, to use SNS to push things, commands to Lambdas, yeah, and say, hey, please now do that. I have heard from the outside world that something happened here, and I know you have to do this now, yeah. So it's fully okay, but it is a thing that the development team really needs to be aware of, and where they need to discuss. Therefore, not only, but also, we have a practice that before starting to implement something, we discuss with at least one other developer and at least one senior developer involved how we want to solve that.
Okay. Yeah. So we discussed different points where your serverless architecture evolved over time. Florian, is there anything to add? Any other aspect that comes to your mind?
Sometimes there are resources in AWS which are used by at least in a lot of modules, like some central S3 bucket or something like this. And yeah, something that made our lives as developer easier to use appconfig for propagating such centralized bucket names or something like this instead of the environment variables.
So basically, you're using appconfig for, let's say, global configuration that you need in almost all your Lambda functions. And you're using environment variables for the more specific configuration parameters.
Exactly. And the same thing applies to what Lars said. If it's in your little scope, naming doesn't matter that much. And when the app config grows, you should have a good naming scheme.
One thing that comes to my mind, because it's also a very quite current topic, is the design of the CDK stacks. We are talking about several thousand AWS resources that we are creating. Mm-hmm. So one stack with a limit of 500 resources is not enough. I would say from today, one thing that we have not spent enough thought on was how to maintain the dependencies of the different cloud formation stacks. Caused us some trouble during deployments to resolve those kinds of dependencies.
So when we started out, we basically used a lot of stacks, and that caused sometimes problem when you remove a dependency which is used in another stack and so on. And we prefer to use fewer stacks and using more nested stacks now, and keep things more coupled and together. We try to modularize it more via constructs or nested stacks, and not by just separating them in different stacks.
So the funny thing is, those thinking about how you modularize your CloudFormation stacks, this has been something that I've been struggling from the very beginning when using CloudFormation. And now we have CDK, which is just a layer on top of that. But we still have the same problem as you're describing. You still have to decide, is this something we want to have loosely coupled, so we're just passing the output as an input? Or is it something that really depends on each other? So I think this is really still an issue, of course, because maybe back to the beginning, the problem domain, the way you structure your microservices or the different parts of your application and your system is still relevant. So you still need to think through that, even though you're using CDK as a layer on top that seems to hide all those issues from you. So I think that is back to that and from the beginning, an important learning.
Exactly.
That as well. Okay. So that leads me to my last question. So what do you think are the most important reasons for your customers to choose a serverless architect? Is it about costs, agility? What's their main reasons?
The pension scheme application, for instance, is a good example for this, because those applications can be pretty cheap when you have workloads that aren't that good predictable, but most of the time there isn't that much workload on the system. And that's, for instance, not the case, because we have continuously sometimes predictable some imports. Their user, well, they're mostly based here in Germany, so over the day they access most likely the front-end application part. By night there is less traffic. Okay, in this example, I would say it's pretty predictable, but we don't have to think about it. It's just, yeah, it just scales down and scales up for you. And
I would agree. For them, I think agility is really an important thing. So first, not having the need to provision infrastructure. So you save a lot of time being able to start with your project. And second, what I got as feedback for many times, the immediate visibility of the results.
Yeah.
So I think that are the two things that are really a big pro of choosing for the serverless approach.
Definitely, definitely. So, Florian and Lars, thanks a lot for all your insights into complex serverless applications and building them together with a team. I want to repeat that there is an open position at TechRacer. So basically, you're looking for a future colleague. And TechRacer is a premier AWS consulting partner with offices in Germany, Austria, Portugal, and Switzerland. And if you want to join Lars and Florian and develop serverless applications on AWS with Lambda, EventBridge, API Gateway, DynamoDB, and so on, and you are into CDK, Node.js, TypeScript, maybe also Go or Python, then you should definitely check out the job description and apply. Thanks a lot, Lars and Florian, for sharing your insights and participating in this show. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Andreas.
Thank you very much, and thanks for listening.